Our next guest, Jeremy Brecker, a historian, documentary filmmaker, activist, and author of more than a dozen books on labor and social movements, including the widely acclaimed book Strike, which celebrated its 50th anniversary back in 1972, and there was a special publication put out, I think, in the early 2020, I think it was. But Jeremy, thank you so much for making time to join us tonight. Appreciate it.
It's great to be with you. And, you know, I used the verse from that song that you just played, Working on a World by Iris DeMint, as the closing for my new book, The Green New Deal from Below. So it was great, very apropos to hear it tonight.
Yes, definitely. It's I played it. And, of course, the new book, The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy. Congrats on this book. I know this has been out for a while, late last year, but thank you so much for your work on the climate crisis, or I should really say the intersection of the climate crisis and social justice issues that you've been working on for quite a long time. So congrats, Jeremy.
Great. Well, thank you. And it's great to be on your show again and to hear you and talk.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to start off with the bad news here in terms of the climate crisis. I was just reading an article that kind of summed up what's been going on in terms of the Trump administration's attempt to impound $20 billion in federal funds for climate and green energy programs approved by and authorized by Congress. Trump's, of course, targeting all these climate programs that were approved under the Inflation Reduction Act and other initiatives that came out of the Biden administration, rather. You know, he's doing that along with targeting New Deal programs and civil rights programs. And environmental and the climate regulations seem to be all part of this target list. So before we get into the particulars of the book, Jeremy, just maybe a brief word on your perspective of what we're seeing unfolding with the Trump administration as regards the environment and the climate crisis.
Well, the broad picture is that when Trump came in, the possibility seems to range anywhere from a kind of repeat of the first Trump administration with its all the horrible things that it did, but not that effectively, to a really full-scale establishment of a fascist regime ruling the United States. After 100 days, I think we can say pretty clearly that their intention was to do as close to a fully fascist regime as they could possibly arrange, but that also their incompetence and their willingness to act in a way that is completely against the values and beliefs of the American people has meant that they have stumbled over and over again in that process. And so what we're seeing is a completely incompetent attempt to establish a dictatorship, an authoritarian government in the United States. Now, if you look at Trump's whole record from his beginning, and if you look at the worldwide movement that I sometimes refer to as parafascism, it's some of them call themselves fascists, some of them say don't, but there are movements all over the world that have all the hallmarks of a fascist movement. And in all of them, not only climate denialism, but militant opposition to climate protection has been a virtually universal theme. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly true with Trump. I think that one of the ironies here is that while the Biden administration did have some substantial climate protection programs, they were strongly counterbalanced by his own expansion and subsidy of it's climate-destroying fossil fuel expansion, which was enormous, turning the United States into the greatest fossil fuel exporter in the world, producer in the world, rather, and providing subsidies and free hand to drill on federal property. So it's not as if the Biden administration was actually protecting the climate, but Trump is going to a far further extreme in terms of gleefully destroying the climate.
Yeah.
And just the last word, what my perspective is on this whole thing is that fortunately there is a fast developing anti-MAGA, anti-Trump movement. And it started out with demonstrations 100 days ago with 100 or a few hundred people in them. And in 100 days, we've seen two demonstrations with a number of people involved in the millions across the country. So that burgeoning popular response and popular rejection, plus the collapse of public support as shown in the poll data, that's leading, I think, to what was rapidly becoming a massive repudiation of Trump and Trumpism. And I think that the key that needs to be put in the keyhole here to unlock the climate issue is to show how profoundly central climate destruction is to the Biden, to the Trump agenda. And as we roll back the other devastating attacks that are coming from the MAGA forces, to see that restoring the climate and doing a better job of protecting it, stopping destroying it the way Trump is destroying it and doing a better job of protecting it than Biden did, needs to be central to our pushing back and then eventually pushing off the stage of history of MAGA and Trump.
Thank you for that, Jeremy. So your new book, again, the title of which is The Green New Deal from Below, How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy, you cover local grassroots projects that attempt to take the ideas of the Green New Deal that was first proposed by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC of New York, and Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey back in 2019 when they first brought up the idea. And although that legislation fails, as you talk about in the book, it inspired activists at the grassroots level all over the country to work to make the vision of the Green New Deal real in the cities, towns, and neighborhoods where they live. And it's very exciting development because things are going on. This movement is gaining ground, although it's not at the federal level. It is taking place, and this book tells that story. Do you want to summarize some of these exciting projects that are going on with some examples, Jeremy?
Sure. Just to take a couple. One of the most impressive is the Boston Green New Deal. Some of these call themselves Green New Deals. Some of them don't use the term, but they have the same basic philosophy and policy. In the case of the Boston Green New Deal, it is the official policy of the city of Boston. Mayor Wu was heavily involved with planning it and initiating it, and it has continued since her initial election several years ago with an incredible range of Green New Deal-style programs. And I'll just mention a couple, and then I'll go on to another location. But one of my favorites is that they're providing free food for both breakfast and lunches for every public school student in the Boston public school system. And it is prepared using local food to provide a market for local food producers. It is made, the meals are made by a co-op that is a worker and black-owned co-op in one of the poorest neighborhoods in Boston. So it's putting together the need of kids, and especially low-income kids, for healthy meals and the need of people in a poor community for jobs and the advantages of not being dependent on corporate food producers, Marriott and the other very problematic companies that provide a lot of the public school feeding programs, and instead a cooperative that's devoted to both worker justice and supporting local farms. So that's one of my favorites. But to take another example, they have a whole green youth jobs program, which is provides paid education and then work programs for young people, especially for young people who have been in trouble with the law and are in need of a pathway to a different way of life. And it has created a jobs program for them that is focused on environmental needs of the city and environmental training. So they're learning arboriculture for dealing with trees and planting trees and pruning trees and keeping them healthy. They're involved with solar installation and design and a wide range of other things that, again, are involved both with protecting the climate, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, creating jobs for those who most need them, and at the same time helping neighborhoods that are also in need both of environmental protection and of these good jobs. To take a very different example that I discovered actually after I finished the book, I discovered the DeKalb New Deal, and I assumed that that was in DeKalb, Illinois. Mm-hmm. But I began researching it a little deeper, and I discovered that the DeKalb New Deal, Green New Deal, is in DeKalb, Georgia, mm-hmm. Which is a county of nearly a million people. Suburban county outside Atlanta, and they decided that they were going to do their own Green New Deal at a county level, and they have a whole range of programs. I won't go into them here, but the local leadership of the county is devoted to it. They hold annual gatherings. Community gatherings to design the next phase. They have over 20 resolutions and policy initiatives that they've undertaken in Georgia. So that was an eye-opener to me, and it's an illustration also of how widespread these programs are. You think, oh, well, this must be just happening in blue cities or blue states, but right. It's not at all true. Even Mississippi has a, they don't call it a Green New Deal, but it has quite a substantial program for advancing solar, residential solar energy, and it's specifically aimed for low-income families and communities.
Jeremy, I hate to interrupt, but we're almost out of time, and
I'll just say that in the book we cover more than 100 cases in more than 40 states.
Yeah, no, it really exciting to see all these things laid out and what people are actually doing, but there is this Under Two coalition, a global network of all these non-governmental organizations and governments as well that are pursuing this. These policies to address the climate crisis. And just in closing, because we only have less than a minute left, what is your hope for this network of all these groups that you talk about in this book?
Well, I think, first of all, they're showing that democracy works and that people can affect in their local situations, they can affect both the climate and also their other needs through democratic action. And then that lays the groundwork for a national Green New Deal when we have political conditions that make that possible. And finally, I think the point that you raise is right on target, that to address climate change, we need a global movement. And there is, in fact, a global movement all over the world. And it's for green. You almost always talks in terms of a Green New Deal, and once we get Mr. Trump and MAGA off the stage of history, we're going to be in a position to come roaring back with a global Green New Deal.
Excellent, Jeremy. Again, congrats on the book, and highly recommended. It's again titled "The Green New Deal from Below: How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy." Jeremy, thanks for all you do, and we'll stay in touch. There's a lot to talk about.
Thanks to your listeners for being here.
Yeah, it's not all Washington. It's going on all over the place. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Jeremy Brecker, historian, documentary filmmaker, activist, and author of more than a dozen books. Again, his newest book is The Green New Deal from Below: How Ordinary People Are Building a Just and Climate-Safe Economy. This is Scott Harris. Program is Counterpoint. Be back next Monday evening with another edition of the show at 8 p.m. every Monday.